Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We will be at Costas in Dundalk on Friday, our first turn there since the death of Mr. Costas. And we're going to be out and about all month long. We'll be at the Beaumont next week in Catonsville up at Cooper's North on the 23rd and then at Coco's on the 30th. This guy and I probably had a crab cake 30 years ago. He used to come and sit in my studio when he was in downtown Baltimore from time to time in the old WLG studios. It has been a minute. He came into my life as a pretty good basketball player with the Terps when I was 4, 5, 6 years old in the early 70s and a part of the famous 73, 74 teams, along with John Lucas, along with Tom McMillan, and for Lefty Driesell. It is a pleasure to welcome back on for the first time in a long time, my friend Len Elmore. Len, how are you? Where's life taking you, man?
Well, there are many places. You just mentioned the beginning, so to speak. Obviously playing in the league, both the ABA and the NBA for about 10 years. And, the time that we used to spend downtown, I was practicing law with a firm in Baltimore for a period of time. So sorry about that. But the end of the day, now after practicing law, I ran a couple companies, being a TV commentator, obviously for 30 plus years. And now I am teaching at Columbia University in the sports management department. This is my 7th year. I kind of amassed all this institutional knowledge and I got to do something with it and hopefully pass it on to young sports professionals moving towards some leadership positions down the road.
What are you teaching, Len? I mean, and I would say, had you been a teacher 20 or 30 years ago, clearly the business was different, the industry was different. And you and I have gone back and forth, and I know all the years on television about, do we pay the student athletes? Do we not? Clearly, we're in a wild, wild west here that maybe at no point we could have predicted before.
Well, I mean, it's interesting you say that because some of my courses touch on that. I teach a course about athlete activism for social justice, which is kind of a history course. Athlete activism didn't start even with Ali or even with Tommy Smith and John Carlos or even Colin Kaepernick. It goes way back to the turn of the century when sport became a real thing in America. We also teach a leadership course, leadership in the business of sports, which kind of embraces the art and the science of leadership in total, but applies, sports, settings to some of the instances and actions, that leaders take. I also am dealing with a course that works with the NFL and monitors their Inspire Change program. And we just now have a course that works with the National Basketball Players Association and the Next Gen Basketball Players Union, which is the G League Union, helping them find ways to, help subsidize young players who had some NIL success in college, but it doesn't quite translate into the G League. And my students are looking for ways that can help them improve that plight. So, in a number of ways, and a number of interesting dynamics, college sports and pro sports, have a way of kind of entering different realms, and our students are studying those realms.
More rewarding than practicing law here 30 years ago, just in a different sort of way where you are in life right now to preach and teach to young people about trying to make their lives better?
I would say yes. I mean, my initial practice in law was more community-based. I was a prosecutor in my hometown, Brooklyn, New York, and could do some good things there. Be fair and focus on doing justice rather than just merely convict. Also had a lot to do with our program in Brooklyn that would prosecute police brutality. So that was rewarding enough. But when I got into the corporate stage of law, it wasn't nearly the type of area that I was happy with. And that's why I moved on to business and leading some companies, as well as now teaching through all of those institutional experiences, trying to, I guess, cultivate young minds, from ethics, values, and principles as they bring it into the sports realm.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating ride for me, getting sort of thrown out of the local media, even though my organization is represented on the Orioles and the Ravens and what pro sports teams want or what they believe in. I'm in this era now where it's like reality television. They create these reality vignettes that they're constantly selling it. And the college thing, at least the pro thing for the whores and gamblers and what it is and the betting and, just the money and the licensing, all the part of that. College was always, we're a couple of years into this, Len, where March Madness, everybody was making money on March Madness Thursday except the kids dribbling the ball. Everybody, popcorn makers, you were calling the games for CBS. Everybody's making money except the kids dribbling. It always made me itch. Well, we fixed it now. And now there's a portal, and now you're writing last week, which brought me to you. Didn't take long for the shoe to drop at the University of Maryland in some rather ugly ways in the modern era of what the Big Ten is, what money is, what NIL is, basketball versus football in a big school. You covered some of this, but I want to give you the floor to not necessarily reiterate the points you made in your piece, but certainly loyalty and what's expected of the fans, of the boosters, of the residents of the state of Maryland who contributed to pay Kevin Willard's salary. We're in a different sleazy, greasy kind of era than the days of bags full of money for prospects 50 years ago, right?
Oh, there's no question. When the money gets bigger, obviously the rules start to shrink, and ultimately people find ways to exploit, the lack of guardrail. And that's kind of what we have now. Obviously you're referencing, name, image, and likeness, and the ability for these young people to be able to exploit that and capitalize on it as much as the regular students on campus can, which is great. But what we've done now is, stretched it to the point without guardrails, to the point where, they're literally getting paid to play, and there's really no difference between what's going on here and the pro game. And in fact, it's probably even wilder than the pro game, because at least in the pros, they have anti-poaching rules, where, unlike college, as soon as the transfer portal opens up, I'm sure you have coaches from other teams calling up players on your team, telling them, if you come with us next year, we can pay you more money. You can't do that in the pros. The transfer portal now, you have guys that are playing basketball at 24, 25 years old in college basketball. I'm not sure that was the intent of college basketball, for guys to be around 6 and 7 years, which ultimately will be the case when players get these exemptions. But, in the end, I think that senses are going to come to the forefront. And people are going to start to recognize there need to be some guard rules. I mean, I think Congress may ultimately get involved in some way, shape, or form to kind of bring some sanity to what is kind of spiraling out of control. What started out to be a good idea, we're starting to have issues. Now, when it comes to Maryland, my issue has always been, we want success with the Terps. And I look at some of our peers who've had continuity on the sidelines. Coaches who are alumni, athletic directors who are alumni. And, that's usually their last stop. And we've got so many instances at Maryland of hiring these, what I consider itinerant coaches, who will stick around for a couple years until the next shiny job comes along. And then it's time to leave without really, cementing the program, putting, a kind of continuity in place where there's a succession plan, and you just continue to have those who are from the school continue to run the program. And the reason why that's important, because that's the last job any alumni wants, and that's to work at their alma mater. I use Gary Williams as a great example. He was comfortable at Ohio State, had an opportunity even to coach the Celtics, but when he got the Maryland job, he said that that was it. And it took a while. I mean, he had to take Maryland out of a precarious situation, and ultimately culminating in a national championship. And I use Gary as a great example of someone who had loyalty, bled Terp blood, and ultimately, we had great success. There are also studies that show that when alumni are in key positions, leadership positions in an athletic program, that athletic program finds some success in more times than not. Not always, but more times than not. And when you look at many of our peers, the Dukes, the Carolinas, some of the other schools that have had that type of succession, they have a great deal of success on a continuous basis. I'm looking for that at Maryland. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people who pay a lot of money to have influence, and that's essentially their reason to be involved, so they can have a voice in what goes on. Maybe they don't have it at home. I don't know. Maybe they don't have it at their jobs, but they have it at the University of Maryland. And they put pressure on administration to make hires that sometimes don't make sense. And I don't mind saying that, as that's probably why I become persona non grata in some instances at the university. But in the end, I think
Oh, they
the
threw you out too, huh? So you're speaking up. They want truth. They want unfiltered feedback, but then they get it. And I listen, you mentioned Duke and Carolina, and all these years later, I know that's your DNA. That's my DNA for all of it, but it ain't ever going back into that bottle. And I'm concerned about all of it when I hear that Willard would leave to go to a basketball school because all their money's going to basketball. I'm thinking we really are starting to slice and dice this almost like we do with the kids when we say, what sport are you going to pick? And that's the sport when you're 10 years old. It really is going to be the way these colleges are, because I don't know that everybody like Florida is going to have money for football and basketball and women's sports and all the other things that I thought we're supposed to teach these kids at these schools. I thought they were still supposed to be educational institutions, Len.
Well, yeah, and that's essentially what is getting lost. You don't ever hear anyone in these arguments about whether these kids are employees or they're not getting their fair share. People forget, and I'll even go back to prior to, the advent of House, and before that, Alston, and before that, O'Bannon. People were saying these kids aren't getting anything, and coaches and everyone else are making, the lion's share of money, but they forget that education has value too. And to get a full ride, I remember when I played, to all I had to do was remain eligible, play my hardest out on the court, and represent my university in a consistently good way, I get a free education. I'm the first college graduate in my family. I'm not sure how I would have gotten to college had I not had basketball and a scholarship. There was value there, and that value has lasted me and served me well throughout these years. Now, I'm not saying that they don't deserve to get the opportunities that they're getting now, but I can't see it as labor. And that's what's happened. The conversation has been hijacked by taking what we do as athletes and calling it labor, instead of us looking at it as being beneficiaries of a system that's going to give us an opportunity to be better long after sports is over. I mean, the NCAA tells you in their commercials, 98% of those athletes are going to be professional in something other than sports. And that's where we've lost the focus. So, there needs to be balance. Again, paying young people through NIL, letting them capitalize on a name, image, and likeness is great. Even more stipends that are education related is great as well. But this thing is spiraling out of control. And quite honestly, Nestor, I think that at some point there has to be a guardrail and an antitrust exemption that enables an organization like the NCAA to apply those guardrails might ultimately be the answer.
Trying to get Congress to stop the leader of the free world from breaking the law. So we have all sorts of things. Len Elmore, your time is valuable as always. I would love to be a student. Next lifetime, I'm coming to Columbia if I can get in. I don't know if I'm Ivy. Did they let Dundalk guys in Ivy? But if I come up, I could be a great student. Please come back, teach me some more sometime soon, okay?
It'd be my pleasure, man. Take care.
Keep being cranky out there, creating good trouble down at College Park. Len Elmore, he is still tall and powerful, and still a member of that 73 team. Had Tom McMillan on a couple of weeks ago. Always great to visit with the great Len Elmore. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.